Welcome to Eno Tools University, Season 2, Episode question mark. I'm not sure which number this one is. We'll have to figure that out after editing. But we have with you today, it's none other than Ed Schultz, who is in fact the Ed Schultz from Barrel Associates, who I promise you has forgotten more than half the barrel salespeople on the planet have learned. So I've heard some pretty shoddy presentations, a lot of them from me. But I'm learning from Ed as we go. I'm into my fourth vintage selling D&J, Valurine, and Barrel Associates barrels, and learning a lot from this gentleman right here. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning, Joe. I am the repeat offender. I keep signing up for another semester, and that prevents me from having to find a real job. You know,
Yeah, well.
if I can stay at the University of Ina Tools forever, we're good.
I think I myself am a perpetual student. So we have a very interesting topic. I was just talking to a customer in New Jersey not 10 minutes ago. And this gentleman will know that I'm referring to him if he ever listens to this episode. And he mentioned that he's using not only East Coast fruit, but he's also buying from Washington and California and Oregon. So I had a really good time recommending to him that he do a trial with a couple of our barrels. So as a review for you folks out there, the barrels that Eno Tools is representing are Barrel Associates, D&J, and Valurine. And the way these all go together is D&J stands for Dargaud and Yaigle. They are actually the owners of a sister cooperage, Valurine. And I should probably step back and let Ed explain who these guys are and what makes them different. But I had that discussion with the guy in New Jersey, and he wants to try one of each, and he's going to try them on West Coast Reds. So I got to put my California hat on for a minute, thinking about forests. So
Sure.
that was a
Well,
fun, fun call.
the unifying theme between all of those cooperages is origin of the oak species. The unifying theme of winemaking is what is the origin of the grapes? Well, the trees are plants and they are representative of the places where they grow and the climate they were grown in. So D&J Cooperage over 100 years ago began discovering that the oak trees in different parts of France imparted different kinds of characteristics to their Chardonnay wines, which surrounding the cooperage 100 years ago were exclusively dry farmed vines. Very stony soils, very subtle characteristics, and the people did not want heavy blankets of oak on their beautiful fruit. What they wanted was framing and subtlety and finesse and aromatic capture and palate length and excitement. They wanted live wine, not dead wine. So the D&J Cooperage prospered in that neighborhood because they had developed a
What
method.
neighborhood? Ed, be more specific. What
Oh,
neighborhood?
the neighborhood is the Mâconnais, Beaujolais, South Burgundy, the birthplace of Chardonnay in France. This is where, by stroke of good luck, Mr. Dargaud, 100 years ago, 1921, set up shop right near another estimable wine company named Georges Dubuff, and the two of them put Romanèche Doran on the map. Beaujolais wines, DJ became well associated with Georges Dubuff because they were the local cooperage, but they also supplied to any number of people in the surrounding countryside. And I mentioned that the Chardonnay people did not want heavy blankets of oak. They wanted to celebrate the life and aromatics and wonderfulness of their Chardonnay. So the water bending process that Mr. Dargaud came up with, and a number of other cooperages in that zone started doing something similar right after the end of the last pandemic. The so-called Spanish flu was winding down. World War One was winding down, and there was a new day and a new opportunity to get businesses going. And the Roaring Twenties were just kicking off, and Mr. Dargo had a better idea, and they prospered. And the other cooperages that were lesser well organized succumbed to the competition. And D&J became the predominant cooperage in that area because of the excellence of what they were doing and their unswerving focus on the origin of the oak trees and bringing those forward in an organized fashion so that those origin characteristics can impart whatever they do to the wine. And the understanding of that began 100 years ago, and it continues to this day. The D&J cooperage still relies on origins of oak so that the winemakers who buy the barrels can rely on that consistent reflection of what the tree species brings forward. And then you don't have to worry about what you're getting this year because you already know. Once you've done the headwork and the homework for the framing, then you just leave it up to the cooperage to keep delivering the same effect year after year after year. So
Which they're
it's the
known
only,
for, by the
yeah,
way.
this is what consistency, D&J is known for consistency.
Yep.
And one of the reasons they're known for that is their reliance on the origin of the oak. Other cooperages have fallen off the train by trying to go with, we're going to sort by tannin, we're going to sort by grain width, we're going to sort by whatever the heck you can think of. And none of it is as important for consistency as the origin, where the tree grew, what it took up from the soil, what the atmosphere brought to it, what the DNA of that tree was over the course of 200 plus years. It's elemental. And that's what they rely on. And that's what our customers celebrate. I had a lunch with a client yesterday who just could not thank me enough for tasting the wines, spending a couple of years tasting their wines, and then explaining what I thought would be a proper match for what they were trying to achieve. And it's one of the origins that works very well. They've used it ever since. It's now their benchmark barrel that they measure other barrels against. And most of the other ones have kind of fallen away because they do not measure up. They're not consistent. They're not as elegant. They don't bring as much flavor and texture and framing and finesse. And this is what they're looking for to perfect their wines. And the D&J is a very reliable source for excellence. And the salespeople, sales reps, our job is to help match the origin to the objective. If the winemakers aren't certain, we can make recommendations. If the winemakers know what they want, they just have to look at our sales materials and look at, we've plotted out the origins of the species that are available, the sizes they're available in, and what some of the general thumbnail examples are of things that you can expect. And the winemakers can make their own decisions, or we can lend some assistance.
Well,
It's
that is kind of like in a nutshell what we do and what we tell those folks. But I want to go backwards a little bit. Right now is the time where we're still accepting barrel orders. We're having these discussions with customers, like the things Ed is saying right now. I hear bits and pieces in there of things that I tell folks in my presentation, and this is that time of year. We're still taking orders. So this is all very fresh in my mind. But Ed, we got to back up and explain a little bit about the options that exist. There is another podcast episode about American Oak, so we won't go into the Barrel Associates brand barrels on this discussion. But the thing that I find fascinating about Valurine, it seems like everybody's heard of D&J. And I remember when I 15 years ago or so, when I was training with another cooperage, I used to sell a different brand of barrels. The only downfall of those barrels was that they were kind of bad at holding liquid. I actually had, no kidding, 20% of my shipment my last year selling those barrels. 20% of the barrels that came to the East Coast from this little tiny, super high-end artisan cooperage, they were leakers. And it was always the same thing. It was either at 5 o'clock or 7 o'clock. It was a skinny stave, and it was an end grain leak in every single one of those barrels. And so, sure, they probably passed the water test, hot water, steam, see if it'll hold liquid, whatever. But
Maybe.
alcohol has a different viscosity. And so
Right.
alcohol
Less
would,
dense.
yeah.
Less
So
dense than water.
alcohol leaked, water didn't. And so I had to drive all over my, 1,000 mile wide territory to go and assess the situation and perform repairs where needed. The other issue we had with that cooperage was there was no support on this continent. We didn't have a facility where we could repair them on this continent. We had to beg for favors if it was one of those tear it down and replace the stave deals. So anyway, thank you for allowing me to vent about that because it was quite upsetting.
I can well imagine because having to deal with any single repair is a wrinkle in the day that it, and it demands attention right now. You have to drop everything else that you were going to do to deal with that issue. And when they multiply, it becomes you're backpedaling and trying to recover your stride instead of moving forward. So with
So
that,
wait, let me, sorry, I got to interrupt you. Back to the thought about Valurine. The thing I
yes.
find fascinating about them, because I came across D&Js. Everybody knows D&Js. I came across them doing training for that other cooperage, and I explained just now needlessly about why I quit following, them, quit supporting that brand. But every place I went during training back then, right next to the barrel I was selling at the time was always a D&J, and we would taste through them every place we went in Northern California, every appellation, every varietal that the old brand of barrels was used for. Always I would see D&Js, and we would taste through them, and I got to the point where I was giving them the side eye. I was very unhappy about how good they were right next to the barrels I was selling at the time.
Yes.
So later on, 2020, the opportunity presented itself to sell this brand. And I know all about the forest designation, the culling process, the aging process, stave selection, all those back of the house secrets for why they're so dead nuts consistent vintage after vintage. But then when you tell a customer about the wood choices for Valurine, it's amazing.
Valerine, huh?
I don't know who else is doing it, but I'm going to let you explain it.
Okay, well, Valerine is a relatively new name for a relatively old cooperage. So the older name would be familiar to people who go back a century or so. Valerine Cooperage as an entity is now producing barrels for customers that they sold to more than 100 years ago. Some French winery operations only order cooperage about every 80 to 100 years. I mean, it's a long sales cycle in France. You have to be very, very patient. And the Valerie name is a relatively new one for this relatively old enterprise in the Rhone Alps. No other cooperage exists anymore anywhere in the Rhone except this one. And it's a wonderful little setup with a small cooperage, a very it's artisan in size and style, but it's very technically proficient in every way that matters. It's four, sometimes five people working on barrels using the origins that D&J can season in Burgundy and making them in a rather unique fashion. You're right. It's about the only one that I can think of that does it exactly this way. The seasoned wood from Burgundy is superior to any oak that would have been seasoned in the Rhone because the Rhone is just too hot and too dry. So the difference in sunburnt staves on the top of the stack to under-seasoned underneath is too vast. And so the seasoning that happens in the yard down in Burgundy, however, in Romanèche-Touraine, is superior. And then the wood is trucked up, trucked whichever direction you want to call it, to Valerine Cooperage. And you get the benefit of the seasoning in Burgundy and the expertise of the coopering in the Rhone, which is to say that in the Rhone, there are a left bank and a right bank where they look at wines that are arguably more feminine and more floral and more aromatic. And then there are wines that are more powerful and more, have bigger body and bigger. It's sort of a, it's the right bank, left bank kind of a thing where that they demarcate a thumbnail grasp of what the fruit is going to produce. And so the cooperage is oriented to producing a left bank and a right bank barrel. And the Rive Gauche is the lighter structured woods, lighter framed origins, mixed with a little bit of something else for aromatic capture, for finesse, for a better, just a better overall aromatic expression of what that fruit can deliver. The right bank Rive Droit, those barrels are designed for more powerful wines and a more powerful framing expression. So it's a bigger frame mixed with a little bit of the lighter toned woods, and it's a recipe based on origins, but also based on the concept. So they draw from the origins that are available in Burgundy, and then they bring the staves up to the cooperage. After the cooperage is done working the barrels, they move them even farther up the hill to a cave where the barrels rest for a, equilibrate, and they're gently seasoned, if you will, for a period of months, and then they're shipped on out to, wherever we order them to, or wherever, they Valérien Cooperage is a global enterprise from a tiny little shop there in Morges-en-Valois, right near Ampuy. They ship to Greece, they ship to Italy, they ship to Spain, they ship to, the Canary Islands, you name it. Wherever there is great wine to be made on wonderful soils, the Valérien barrels go in small quantities, beautifully crafted by a tight little team of people, and they're exceptional barrels. The oldest cooperage by far in that part of France, the only one left in the Rhone, and they got there by being more successful, and D&J has taken that enterprise and perfected it. They've updated techniques. They haven't swerved from the original style, which was fire bending. So they've adopted that technique and applied the D&J finesse to perfect the cooking over fire in a very unique way, using a series of fire pots of different sizes, applying technology to measure temperatures and moistures and resistance so that they can gauge. As the wood softens in the heat, then they can gather the barrel together, and it's a very highly engineered process that takes the best of what fire bending can deliver and maximizes it. The cooking temperatures are dialed in, the effects are superior, and the barrels are available only in small quantities. It's not for everyone, not for everywhere. But only for discriminating winemakers who want something really exceptional. They build up to, I think, 600 liters there at that shop. And like I said, some of those 600 liter customers are just reordering after having the last set of 600s, wore out after 100 years, and they had to order some new ones, finally got around to it. So and fortunately, the enterprise was there to say, okay, yes, we'll take the reorder. Thank you. We can build that. So, consistency, patience, long-term view, these are all hallmarks of both the D&J and the Valérien enterprises. They're dedicated to their craft, they're the best that they know how to be, and they're constantly in search of perfecting their style, not swerving from it, not deviating from it, but perfecting it, updating, always refining just a little bit, just a little bit more. That's characteristic of both of those enterprises. They've never sat still. Every year, When there's downtime, they are working on a new machine. They're working on a new technique. They are improving the way that the heads are seated, that the way the heads are constructed, the way that things are sanded, the way that everything is constantly reevaluated. How can we make it a little bit better? How can we make the wine frame just a little bit more precise, a little more consistent? It's not about how can we make it cheaper, faster, easier for the accountants. That is not their deal. The prices do go up because they are not looking to cut cost corners. They look to improve their energy efficiencies. I mean, they're certainly sensitive to environmental considerations and smoke capture and energy capture. They're both green enterprises that are the contribution of, total carbon from building wood barrels is almost negligible over the course of a year. I mean, the total residue from the D&J cooperage after building whatever 25, 30,000 barrels a year will fit in a kitchen trash can. I mean, it is just a ridiculously small amount of carbon dust that is left over at the end of the year. It is amazing. So they have taken the technology that's available to improve their enterprises, creating their own energy, making their own steam, making, bringing something back in every way and shape and form. And, so they have achieved efficiencies, but they are not cost cutters. They are quality improvers through and through. That's their only reason for being, is to improve the quality year after year. It's very unusual in this day and age. It's very wonderful.
Well, it's interesting to hear these things, a couple of them for the second time or third time, but to put it all into one pile like that. I hope that for the casual listener that people understand that what we're saying is that D&J has a sister cooperage called Valurain. The main two big differences between the two, while they source, cull and age wood in a very similar fashion in one location. The barrels are built in different facilities. Valurain uses a fire bending process. D&J uses a water bending process, which is the key to having barrels with very good manners and wines with silky polished structure, long linear finish like a silk tablecloth falling off a waxed table or polished table. All those things can be yours if you order the D&Js, but if you're looking for something slightly different, if you'd like a little bit more assertive barrel, but assertive in a way that is similar to D&J in scale, because it's all about scale. Example, think of the most well-known fire-bent French barrel, and I won't say it, but I'm sure somebody knows the name bears similarity to the band Foo Fighters because there's two of the same letter in the two words. Think of a barrel with a name like that, and now take away more than half of the spice probably and all of the smoke, and you have a Valurain. And Valurain, Ed was explaining, we only have two options for forest designations on Valurain barrels, and I think it's amazing because the two predominant species of oak trees they use to make barrels from in France, Quercus petraea and Quercus robur, they sort of overlap coincidentally on either side of the river. And when you're in a boat going south down the river, you have the right bank and the left bank. And those two broad areas, which are comprised of all of the smaller forests you're used to hearing the names of when you order barrels, those forests reside on one side of the river or the other. And as Ed was saying,
You're talking about the Loire River now, right?
yes. So you have the Rive-Droit designation wood from Valurain, which tends to lift and boost the fruit in a stronger wine. It respects the fruit, it adds structure and holds it up. Riv Gauche has a tendency to give a wine a sort of rounder mouthfeel, a little bit more palate presence, which is needed on a lighter body wine. So really, it's almost too vague to seem like a suggestion for a barrel when a customer calls and says, "Hey, I need some advice on these Valérie barrels. What would you use on this?" Well, it's really that simple. We can play with the toasting, we can maybe mix it up, give you a couple different ones to try. On this most recent phone call with the customer in New Jersey, I recommended to him a Rive d'Oie for his bolder West Coast fruit and center of France, because it might end up with a D&J center of France. It might end up with some West Coast fruit of a less bold variety, and it might also be the home for some East Coast grown Cabernet. So that barrel, we'll find out what he puts in when he gets it. But
Okay. All right.
yeah,
The
we'll
I just wanted to walk one thing back that I think there are forests with wonderful oak trees north and south of the Loire River in France. I think the origin of the Valérien name, however, was it was kind of a family concept of the Valérien, the golden, well, Orine, it's a Roman term for gold, and so the Rhone River is what runs through that area, and it was the right bank and the left bank of the Rhone River being the different fruit qualities of the Rhone, which was that's where I think the family came up with this concept of the name and the concept of the Rive d'Oie, Rive Gauche for the barrels. Now, for oak trees, of course, it's north and south of the Loire River. Some of the forests north of the Loire, Saint-Pélée, for example, much lighter toned woods, and they were comprised of a couple of forests around that was D&J's older Selection 3, which we can no longer offer as a separate selection. All of the Selection 3 wood is now in the Center of France blend. And the forests south of the Loire River are the Allier River Basin, Troncé Forest being the most famous one in that Allier River Basin, Bertrange Forest in the Nièvre region, so some of those forests south of the Loire River are more structured, more powerful expressions of fruit framing, and some of the forests north of the Loire River are lighter toned, and then of course we've got the way west, France Selection 4. You've got the Juppé Forest, the Bercy Forest. So those forests in the far west, where there's a lot of bracing wind and lighter tones, just because of the environment. There's a lot more fog, a lot more wind blowing in off the coast, and it's a much more maritime environment. So you get a if you think about let's call far west Sonoma County fruit. Grapes grown on the coast of Sonoma County in the fog versus grapes grown in Napa County in Calistoga. You're going to have radically different environments. You might have Chardonnay planted in both places, but you'd get a radically different expression just because the fruit on the coast is going to get that salt air blowing across it and fog and everything else. And then Calistoga, not so much. A lot of heat, a lot of, and it was on fire yesterday. So we're already back in fire season in St. Helena and Calistoga. It's a little bit distressing, but so you've got radically different environments in France based on the proximity of the trees to the coast or the Vosges Mountains growing in granite soil or in Burgundy growing on clay or, wherever you want to point to it, the north of Paris, Fontainebleau Forest. So we've got all these different soils, different climates, different tree DNAs to sort out. And it's the DJ people that do all that horrible, difficult work for us. We don't have to, all we just have to do is place our order. Say, we want this. And they make it roll through the cooperage. It's miraculous. They're the only organization I know of that can do this because it is such a head scratcher and a brain bender to work out where these things were made and grown and cut and then keep them sorted out so that then they can make sense of it to run it through the cooperage exactly to order. Exactly to order. You know, I want one selection one barrel and I want one selection five barrel. And they might have to build those on the same day and have those staves show up simultaneously and keep track of them. It's not easy. This is not an easy thing to do, but they do it diligently. So, and all the wood looks the same. And you mill a stave and then you do another one right next to it. You can't tell which one is selection one and which one's selection five unless you kept track of it. So, you know, it is a real job and they're very good at what they do. So my hat's off to them every day that they do this difficult work and they smile and they keep doing it because it's important. It's important to their jobs and it's important to ours that they keep doing it.
You know, something that I'd like to point out, speaking of keeping all the wood straight and all that stuff, winemakers, you listening to this right now, imagine this. If you worked at a cooperage with your nose and your palate, if you worked at a cooperage and you were the guy making the barrels, believe it or not, after a couple of years working there, you would be able to tell us if that was Grand Vosges wood or Allier wood by the smell. Those guys know their jobs.
That is there is some truth to that. There are aromatic differences to the wood. So, I mean, there are cues, but they're largely not visual ones. It is,
Oh.
it's sense and smell and and six senses that help keep track of some things and chalk marks. You got to use chalk
So,
diligently.
while you were talking about the different fruits on the West Coast, you know, it reminded me how vastly different all of the AVAs in my territory are. But I have some strong opinions about what grows well where in the eastern half of the US. There are one or two grapes and a few types of wine that I would put in front of anyone from anywhere in the world that grow in my territory. One thing I love to think about is the time I was parking the car in California and walking into one of your barrel customers, who would go nameless right now, for a very loose appointment. And when I walked in, by the time I got done taking pictures outside and stuff, my wife had checked in, and this was a Custom Metalcraft customer we were talking to as well. And it was a, hey, drop by if you can, no set time. So we were supposed to come in, do a tasting, and tell the winemaker we were there. He was gone. He was coming right back. So we had lots of time for tasting. I walk up to the tasting room counter, and the guy working says, "You're from the Finger Lakes." And I'm like, I give my wife this look like 20 years in Missouri, and you tell this guy I'm from New York. Okay, great. I didn't think it was pertinent, but thank you for sharing. You know, to myself, I'm saying all that. I just give her this look like, huh. So I said, yes, to the gentleman. Yes, I am from the Finger Lakes. And he said, oh, you're going to love our Riesling. At which point I looked at my wife, very puzzled, because I thought in my mind very quickly, that would be a lot like me saying to this gentleman when he comes to visit us in Missouri, you're going to love our Cabernet. Like, what are you even talking about? You know, Riesling, California, question mark.
Question mark, right.
Yeah, I'm like, what are you doing? So he pours this for us. I'm pretty good at guessing alcohol percentages, pH, and residual sugar. It's kind of a hobby of mine. Without even looking at the label, I knew that this was, you know, close to probably 13% alcohol, maybe 13 and a half. And he came
Definitely
back.
over 9 or 10.
Yes, exactly. And he comes back and he says, "What do you think of that?" And I said, "It's pretty ripe." And my wife kicked me under the counter because we all know what that means when I said it's pretty ripe.
Yeah.
I mean, it was hot, Ed. It was nasty. There was no reason for it. And it was
Right.
upsetting. And I said, "Where's this grown?" And he said, "Well, we grow this in a cooler place because it's Alsatian. And it gets its Alsatian style. And it expresses, in a way that's very Alsatian." And I'm thinking to myself, you can say it as many times as you want, it doesn't become more true.
Doesn't become more true.
And he
Right.
keeps saying it's Alsatian. And then he tells me that it's grown in Carneros. And I'm like, shit, I need a sweater. Like, wow, it's so chilly in Carneros. I'm just like, can I leave now, please? Get me out of here. But then he finally got his wits about him and started pouring red wines. And I was like, thank you. This is why we're here.
Yes. Well, one thing that a comment I got about a week ago that I just want to share on that topic. A lot of the 2022 wines from California are starting to come out, and they were subjected to ruinously high heat. Many of the grapes came in essentially sun-dried raisins. So there is some issue with reduction with, high temperature characteristics, but the D&J barrels, because of their light touch and framing, have been standing out as remarkably good, even in that context. Higher alcohol wines tend to extract more oak components. They'll suck in a lot more oak components, and the wines that would ordinarily stay in, some kind of equilibrium will draw up more oak and become unpleasant from clumsier cooperages. And the D&J ones have been performing very admirably. And the comment to me was, we didn't know just how good they were until we started reviewing our results from the 2022s. And the differentiation is extreme between the performance of the D&J, which is peak, and our other stuff, which we're going, we're not crazy about these results. So it was just you mentioned the thing, the high temperature, the Carneros, the overripe Riesling and all. And there was a lot of overripe character in 2022, but the benefit of working with D&J barrels and Valérien barrels is the finesse and the framing and the not building a barrel that is just going to be sucking, oppressive oak flavors right off into the wine. It's really important. This is the cradle where the wine is raised, and it's got to be a nice gentle cradle and not a clumsy one. So D&J makes very beautiful wine cradles. Valérien makes very beautiful wine cradles. You can find clumsy ones almost anywhere else. And I'm so delighted to be able to offer very nice wine cradles to my customers, ones that I can believe in, ones that they can get something wonderful year after year, consistently, wonderfully well built year after year. It's a message I hope they listen to and pay attention to, because it's very important. You only get one chance to make the wine every year. And if you put it in the wrong cradle, you're going to make the wrong wine and be unhappy. So I try to not let people do that. Don't do this to your wine. I wouldn't do it to mine. Don't do it to yours. That's the best advice I can offer.
An incidental point we should include, Ed.
Yes.
Yes, Valérien oak tanks are expensive. No, nobody makes a better oak tank than Valérien. You will not find a higher quality of construction or build or design or engineering
Right.
or result. You will not beat a Valérien oak tank anywhere in the world for any money.
No. And we're talking a few thousand dollars, which seems like a lot of money, but I see people plunking down thousands of dollars for concrete eggs, which then, you've got all these fiddly cellar nuisances. You got to spray the thing off on the inside with, paint it with tartaric acid and climb inside. You can't wash it with warm water because you're going to crack the darn thing. And there's all these issues. And you can get a wonderful vessel, which is a perfect cradle to elevate the wine, for about the same amount of money, 21st century technology using 19th century timber, perfect the wine, and it's the same amount of money. You make better wine using cleverly built, wonderfully coopered big tanks from Valérien and DJ. I just don't get the cost comparison thing when I see people plunking down money that has nothing but cellar nuisances, and then like, oh, we can't use hot water. Oh, we forgot we used hot water. Oh, my goodness, now we just ruined it. We just cracked our egg. Well, these are the egg beaters, folks. We have the product at the same price that's going to make much better wine, so much easier to deal with, and they're magnificent to look at. They're constructed like buildings, brick by brick. They reinvented the whole process of making oak tanks. They're not built like barrels. They are built like buildings to last, brick by brick, stave by stave, cooked to perfection, then assembled around, a magnificent, vessel to make your wine perfect.
Anybody,
This is what they're all about.
anybody wants to know what we're talking about, there are a lot of links to pictures and there's a video and all this stuff on enotools.com. Look, pull the tab down on the menu for wineries. Click the winery tab and navigate over to French oak, and then on that page at the bottom you'll see information about oak tanks. But these things, if any of you are mechanical or like to work with your hands or have built things before that you bought from, some big Swedish store or something, you'd be really impressed that the oak tanks made by Valérien are so precisely manufactured that if you had an intern poke a fork leg fork into one of the staves and in one of our very nice oak tanks, you could simply snap a couple pictures with your smartphone, and the cooperage will send you that stave.
Right.
Try that. Try that with another brand of oak tank. It's not going to happen.
Right.
So, all right, now I don't want to play stump the DJ. You ready?
Yes. All right.
Tell me, like, now you're limited in your response. Okay. Your response can only be a forest designation or a selection or and a toasting. And we're going to assume that everything we're talking about is in a, traditional Burgundy or Bordeaux barrel. So we won't go it that way.
We're not gonna change sizes. We're gonna stay with 228 or 225.
All right, so you ready?
Yes.
Okay, now I'm going to start with, this is so easy you can do it in your sleep, this one, a Carneros Chardonnay.
First thing comes to mind is Center of France. It's a perfectly wonderfully balanced barrel, and fruit grown on clay soil has some, it's got interesting lemon lime. You're talking about Chardonnay. It's not the most exciting fruit, but it's very predictable. I mean, there's very wonderful crowd pleasing characteristics, and so my first reaction is, in the absence of any other direction, a Center of France medium toast.
Perfect. All right, next. Paso Robles Syrah.
Ah, okay. Vosges medium toast is what would be my first reaction. There are many that spring to mind for that, but a simple association with Pinot and Syrah from many places is a Vosges medium toast. It's a benchmark barrel that is a consistently wonderful performer with those varietals. And there you go.
All right. I don't know if you're going to like this one or not. One of my favorites, though, an Arizona, so probably grown in Gilbert, Grenache.
Well, I'm going to reach a little bit and say we need to offer a lighter frame and see what the fruit is actually delivering. So without knowing too much about that, I'm going to say Bourgogne medium toast, because Grenache can become bubblegummy and tutti frutti and weird with too much sugary, you know, sweetness things going on. And so I, not knowing enough about that, a very conservative approach would be put it in Bourgogne, medium toast, not sweet, not spicy, pleasantly aromatically capturing whatever the fruit can give, decent color. It's not going to be a big mouth-filling expression, but it's going to showcase everything that that fruit has to deliver.
Okay. Charlottesville, Virginia, Merlot.
Okay. I would probably go back to the center of France barrel, but another possibility is the Vosges barrel, because some of the spices that the pepper, the ginger, some of those things that come out of Vosges would probably be a nice counterpoint to some of what I've tasted from the Merlot from that area. So a couple ways you could look at it. If you really want to try and bring more mouthfeel, center of France. If you just want to rely on some spice additions and not worry so much about the volume. If it was a good ripe year, center of France. Some of these things you don't really know, unfortunately, until you get to the end of the race. So you want to have a couple of options on hand so that you can pick and choose according to what you actually got. And if you have to wait until the fruit is in and then assess, sometimes we have inventory barrels available where we can, we do order things ahead for people who need to wait on the East Coast until the rains are done, the fruit's in, and you can assess what things taste like. So, we do have that option in many cases for people that have to wait to the last minute for whatever reason. We can sometimes pull things out of the rabbit's hat, magically make something wonderful appear at your cellar door on demand, but only because we thought ahead to order those barrels in February and March to get them into the warehouse in June, July, August, so that your people in Virginia can order them in November and we maybe get them there by Christmas.
That was a very good point. Folks, we do have inventory. We have stock. Ed, we're going to keep going with name that barrel. So let's see. The reason why I said Merlot from Charlottesville is because it's such a known quantity. I mean, Bordeaux blends from that part of Virginia are some of my favorite wines. And the nice thing about it is you pick them up. You bring them home and you put them away for 3 to 5 years, and then you open them and you can't help but smile. They're just so incredibly legit wines with, I want to say, heritage,
Heritage,
history.
yes.
I think it's a nod to the old world. It's an acknowledgement of the culture and the relationship that existed between America and France way back when.
Way back, right? I mean, these are the wines that Thomas Jefferson wanted to make but couldn't for a
Right.
variety of reasons, but
Those,
labored to produce and couldn't. But yeah, now we understand more about viticulture and more about the relationship of root stocks and whatever, and so it's yeah they and the climate is right, and once you get the viticulture right, then yeah you can make some exceptional wines there, some truly exceptional wines.
And speaking of favorite grapes from favorite places, I'm going to show my hand here. Finger Lakes or Long Island, Cab Franc, they compete. They take turns, being my favorite New York reds. One of the best Cab Francs I ever had on my entire time on this planet was from the North Fork, and it was a Cab Franc, and it was made by Adam Supernot. Back when he was the winemaker at Osprey's Dominion. And I knew the vineyard manager also at the time. It was a cat named, well, his handle is Tommy the Mick. He knows who he is. Anyway, back in those days, This is going back a long way. We had a chance to pour that wine at a reception during the Unified Symposium, and all the guys from the West Coast were clamoring when I challenged them and said, "Try this Cab Franc, but then tell me where it's from." That was fun.
That was fun. Okay.
One guy asked Australia, and I said, "Close." I was being really mean, and
Right.
I finally gave up and I said Long Island. And they're
Oh, he was thinking it was Kunawara Cab Franc or something.
like, who knows? But I'm telling
Okay.
you. So if you had, if you had one of the poster child Cab Francs from
Selection
Minnesota,
one. Selection one. And it's unfortunate that so many winemakers have to make assessments based on production constraints that require, moving things through in a certain fashion according to, the staff that they have and whatever. So a lot of winemakers make the mistake of assessing barrels at the sprint and not the marathon. And it's not because they don't want to do it. It's many times because they can't afford to do that. So I get that. I appreciate it, but you can't properly assess what the barrel did because you didn't leave the wine in there to the full term to make that assessment. So,
And it will change month by month. It's
oh,
going to be different.
absolutely, absolutely, it does. And the wonderful thing about our cooperages, D&J and Valérien, that we're talking about today is that they finish marvelously well in the marathon. And many it's only when the winemakers have a chance to see how spectacular the results are at the end of the term, and they look at what other ones are. Then they go, "Oh my, what you've been telling me is, okay, I'm starting to get it now." I never tell people fibs. I don't need to. Whatever I tell people is rock solid. You can take it to the bank. You can disregard it at your peril. I'm telling you the truth. This is what will happen. This is what you're going to discover. And pay attention. You can disregard the advice if you want, but I don't issue bad advice. I issue good advice based on good results. And our objective is to help you make the wine fabulous, to perfect it, to make it better. If we would not be in this business to try to make it worse, and there's no other cooperage that I would ever want to be selling barrels for. None, zero. I'm perfectly happy with the people that I'm working with and have worked with for 26 years. There's been no reason for me to swerve, to deviate, to make any change whatsoever. I'm totally thrilled. The barrels are totally wonderful, and any winemaker can take that to the bank. That's my position. I'm sticking to it. There's no reason for me to change.
Ladies and gentlemen, you have heard the words of Ed Schultz from Barrel Associates, and I hope that you've enjoyed hopefully learning something about D&J and Valurant. Anyway, thanks again, Ed. Everybody, anybody who has tuned in, thank you.
There you go, Joe. All right.
Right,
Thanks so
everybody.
much for the opportunity. I'm going to sign up for another semester at your school.
All right, we'll play more Name That Barrel later.
All right. Fair
All
enough.
right. Talk to
Have a
you
good
later.
day.